The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Janet Robinson is with me. Janet is a research and training officer for Blanchardstown's local drug and alcohol task force. Janet, can you tell me about a report you've published today and what it reveals about how young people are getting involved in drugs?
Okay, well, what our research has found is there's been a significant increase in the number of under 18s affected by drug and alcohol use in Dublin 15. And this is through either their own drug use, their own addiction, or even a family member's. We've seen this by an increase in the number of young people attending treatment and family support services. Our data also shows that there's an increase in the number of under 18s affected by their family's drug or alcohol use.
So the number of under 18s, when we talk about that, are predominantly kind of at the upper end of that age bracket, 16, 17 year olds, or how young do they get?
Okay, well, there would be some younger ones. You'd be talking about maybe 12 or 13 year olds who would be attending services, but not so much. It's normally from the age of 15 up.
And
however,
yeah, go on,
younger,
sorry.
Younger are still involved in drug use. There's also quite a challenge in encouraging young people to access services because of the normalization of drug and alcohol use within the community. There's a perception that it's okay to use drugs, it's okay to drink. And because of that, there's young people actually not coming forward for the help that they need.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. That's what I was about to say. I wonder for every child who appears and engages with services, how many more are out there either using drugs or dealing drugs or being exposed to them on a daily basis who aren't engaged with services? The number is probably much higher.
We would estimate a considerable amount. We would look at the prevalence data for drug and alcohol use and then look at treatment demand, and you're looking at a really small percentage. You'd be talking about maybe 5% would actually come forward.
Oh my God. Gives an idea of how many are exposed to it then on a daily basis and how young, as you say. When we say drugs, what type of drugs are we talking about?
For the under 18s, you're talking about alcohol, you're talking about cannabis, cocaine, MDMA, ketamine, nitrous oxide. Those would be the main ones.
And how is it that they're finding themselves in this situation? Like what's their pathway into drug use, or like is there a common pathway?
There's many different factors that contribute to under 18s using drugs. It could be as simple as peer influence. My friends are doing drugs, so I'm going to do them as well. It could be family members, older siblings are using, so younger ones are seeing this. So monkey see, monkey do. It could be their parents, or else it's just environmental, as I've touched on before. It's the normalization of drug use where people feel it's socially acceptable, it's risk-free, and hence that's why there's an increase in young people using drugs and becoming dealers and everything else that becomes associated with that.
Yeah, I have to say now that it kind of what you say there chimes with, you know, my own thoughts, my own experience. When you walk around, you know, city centres, and it's not just Dublin, this is true of any kind of the cities in Dublin, Cork, Galway, you name it, and the bang of weed you get kind of walking around places. And I wonder just how difficult it is to turn around to your kids and tell them like that, you know, that that's not okay. This is illegal. This is really harmful. But yet it's everywhere around them.
For sure. That is definitely the challenge. What we, in the Blanchardstown Drug and Alcohol Task Force, we have a family support program. And part of that is we have an education prevention worker who actually goes into schools and delivers drug education prevention information. But the important thing is that it's evidence-based. So we know that the information that's provided to under 18s is age-appropriate and it's actually effective. If the young people are listening to the message, they'll actually get the message about concerning harms associated with drug use and alcohol use.
So do you worry then about, you know, a more relaxed attitude to, you know, smoking cannabis in public areas, to even to not necessarily supervised injection centres per se, but maybe the kind of proliferation of drug use you might see around them in areas as well, that that just exposes people, exposes kids and under 18s to drug use.
In terms of cannabis use, yes, we've 9 years of data which shows that people would think cannabis use is akin to smoking a cigarette. So they don't perceive the risk attached, even though medical professionals and senior Irish medical professionals have been advocating or have been spreading the message concerning the damage that it's doing to people's mental health. In relation to supervised injecting centres, that's not a focus of our research. So that's not something I can really comment on, Ciarán.
Yeah, fair enough. You mentioned dealers as well, Janet, the dealing of drugs. How active or otherwise a role do they play in kind of recruiting young people into the industry, if we call it that?
Yeah, for sure. Well, absolutely. Older drug users have always utilised under 18-year-olds to distribute drugs because there's less criminal penalties because of the person's age. So that certainly is something that has always gone on, and we have seen an increase in it going on in the local area.
I mean, there'll be lots of people listening to this and you know, maybe they'll count themselves blessed. They're not exposed to this type of thing on a daily basis. I think they're going to be really shocked by some of what they're hearing, particularly the idea of, you know, 12 and 13-year-olds, engaging in drug use and the increasing rate of all of that. When you look back over all your research, are there trends there that would suggest this problem is going to kind of keep getting worse? Like, is it a case in the research, and you tell me that year on year, there's kind of more and more young people turning up for treatment or engaging with services?
Absolutely. Our research has shown that there's an increase in drug-related harm, in the hidden harms, which is the under 18s affected by parental addiction, and as I said earlier, low levels of help seeking. So we are concerned about that. And this is why we also have a dedicated family support service that works with under 18s and adults who need support for a loved one's addiction. We've also just recruited another worker due to the demand for this service. So we're definitely seeing an increase in drug-related harm, and we're trying to meet that in an evidence-based capacity.
Janet, we really appreciate you taking the time today. So thanks for speaking to us. Janet Robinson is a research and training officer for Blanchardstown Local Drug and Alcohol Task Force. Janet, thank you.
Thanks very much, Ciarán.
Dr. Bobby Smith with me as well, consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist and an addiction specialist. Bobby, are you at all surprised by what they found in Blanchardstown, the proliferation of drug use amongst kids as young as 12 and 13?
To be honest with you, Ciarán, no, I'm not really terribly surprised. I think it reflects what's occurring and really across Dublin City and, as Janet sort of said, probably every city in the country. And again, if you listen to people who live in urban centres and even towns and villages elsewhere, you know, substance use does seem to have nudged upwards in the last number of years. And as it's nudged upwards amongst adults, some of that just leaks into the adolescent age range.
Yeah, and that seems to be one of the findings of this, that it's kids who are exposed to it at home or amongst their peers. Janet as well, though, mentioned another possible factor, which is, you know, the normalisation of drug use in society. You know what I mean? And the proliferation of it and how open you see drug use now, and that, you know, while you and me maybe can walk past it and kind of shake our heads and think, God, isn't that awful? You know, an impressionable young child that has an impression on them.
Yeah, I'm certainly uneasy about that change as I walk around Dublin City. It's not all pervasive, but certainly if you walk around town for half an hour, you'll be hit by, as you said yourself, the bang of weed two or three times on that walk pretty predictably. And that does seem to be a bit different than it was 5 years ago. And I think it's reflective of a tolerance, perhaps, that the community now has towards weed use, but also an increased, I'd almost say, brazenness that people who use drugs who would have previously done so in the privacy of their own home, in recognition of the fact that actually the wider society doesn't appreciate them engaging in this behaviour, now are just happy to do so in public.
How then do you strike the balance? Because, people then who would be in favour of that more tolerant approach. You know, they're coming from a, you know, from the best of intentions, I would suggest, most of the time. You know what I mean? They are empathetic or sympathetic to those who are using drugs. They see the war on drugs, as it's, you know, might have been called, as having been a failure and doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result being the definition of stupidity. Yet at the same time, if we're seeing tangible negative consequences of a more tolerant attitude, how does one strike the balance?
Yeah, it is a tricky balance to strike. I mean, as society becomes more tolerant of and accommodating of drug use, you're going to get more drug use, which means you're going to get more drug-related harm. You're going to get more children growing up in homes adversely affected by their parents' drug use, which is a key focus of the report as well. It wasn't just about teenagers' own drug use. Mm. And I suppose the challenge for us as a society is to, I suppose, I think, issue a pretty clear message. We don't want our fellow citizens engaging in this behaviour. So, you know, please, if you are choosing to do so, we'd rather you didn't. If you need help in ceasing your drug use, access our treatment services. And that, I think, should be the consistent, clear message.
Yeah, I mean, there's already people texting in, you know, with kind of strong views one way or the other, and quite a few suggesting we need a much lower level of tolerance for dealing of drugs. People are pointing out that, you know, these kids, if they're not getting them at home, somebody is selling them or giving them drugs. And I just wonder as well whether that's, and not to be dismissive of the people texting in, but whether you'll find that actually often those people dealing them or providing them are drug users themselves. You know what I mean? So it's a kind of a fuzzy area then in terms of that zero tolerance approach. I would zero tolerance to the dealer, empathetic to the user. But what happens when they are one and the same person?
Yeah, and very often they are. I mean, our services, we work with teenagers with drug problems, and many of them will get sort of drawn into what maybe wider society might view as dealing, but actually they wouldn't. They just, as far as I'm concerned, they're just sorting their mates out, or else maybe just holding some stuff that they've been asked to hold in the house in order to get their current drugs at a lower price. So kids can be sort of gradually sucked into the, you know, the distribution supply network without viewing themselves as dealers. And then there's a full spectrum of dealing.
Yeah. There's a socioeconomic factor as well, isn't there? I mean, some people would get involved because they see it as a nice way to make a few bob.
Yeah. Some people do, and certainly for maybe younger kids, from maybe particularly if there's short of means at home, you know, they can be looked after and get the nice jackets and the nice runners. Yeah. And it's one quick mechanism of doing so. But, you know, it's important not to create the impression that drug use is something that affects poorer communities. The truth is, you know, if you look at the prevalence rates, the rates of drug use amongst young adults are just as high amongst kids from wealthier backgrounds as they are from poorer backgrounds.
You know, something we've talked about on this show before is the amount of people who are, you could assuming drugs are kind of cannabis-based drugs through vapes. And I just wonder to what extent that might be feeding into this as well.
Yeah.
The amount of young people who vape is just through the roof, it seems.
Yeah, completely. And I, you know, like, it's really disappointing, I suppose, when you look at the success we've achieved with smoking and how we've completely denormalized and almost stigmatized smoking, I guess, over the last 20 years. At benefit from a public health point of view, but we've allowed vaping just sneak in and become hugely normalized amongst teenagers, including young teenagers, over the last 4 or 5 years. And that's normalized a new method of drug consumption. And what were previously just nicotine vapes have now broadened to include what we've spoken before about the HHC vapes, which we know are now banned. But there's also illegal drugs are now sold in vape format. So it's just provided a new mechanism by which drugs can be consumed, which just adds to that normalization. And I suppose we haven't mentioned alcohol, of course, which is
Janet kind of was the first drug she mentioned.
Yeah, and it is our favourite drug in Ireland. So we live in a society, it's not just that we have a complacent attitude increasingly towards drug use. We have historically a complacent attitude towards drunkenness. And it's just that kids now are growing up in a society where they have access to a broader menu of intoxicating substances.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are just choosing to avail of those. So, you know, I've always said that the biggest gateway drug in Ireland is alcohol, and probably the steps we could take to reduce alcohol consumption are likely to have knock-on benefits in reducing drug use.
Bobby, listen, thanks a million for coming in to us. Dr. Bobby Smith, who's a consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist and addiction specialist. Thanks as well to Janet Robinson from Blanchardstown's Local Drug and Alcohol Task Force. Anne Graves is with me now. She's a Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal East and party spokesperson on National Drug and Alcohol Strategy, Addiction Recovery and Wellbeing. Anne, are you at all surprised by the proliferation of drug use amongst younger and younger people?
Not in the least, Kieran. I do welcome the report published by the Drug and Alcohol Task Force. They're a great group. They do, they're very active and they've done a lot of research. And while the initial reading of the report is alarming, it actually reflects what many communities are experiencing as a reality. And gone are the days where it was limited to city centre, north and south. This is an issue in every village and every town right across the country. So it doesn't surprise me, it doesn't shock me, which is a bad thing. She's right. Like, it is, it's become so normalised. People just shrug their shoulders, and I think there are situations where it's even stronger drugs, and it's crack cocaine as well, you know. So it is a good report in that it tells us what's happening, but I'm not surprised by it.
So what do we do about it, Anne?
Well, look, you know, this drug dealing at the school gates, like, it can't be accepted as a norm, you know. And when it rolls out into our schools, our playgrounds, our parks, it becomes an emergency. So the government has to do something. They have to stand up now and act, you know. Since I became the spokesperson for Sinn Féin, I have met large amount of groups. I've been out with service providers, community groups, those that are, you know, dealing with drug intimidation. And last week I met the Family Addiction Recovery Ireland group, which represents 80 local family support groups from right across the island. These are not people that are themselves in addiction, but members of families that are affected by it, be they young or old, you know. And those effects last long after people go into recovery, I have to say. But it is about exposure, it's about peer pressure, you know, but funding is the big thing. So a lot of the community groups and the service providers are saying that they get funding ad hoc rather than multi-annual funding, so there's continuity in terms of them planning what they can do for projects. And, you know, that money needs to be siphoned into the area of services for young people. Be that education, yeah, into the schools, and showing people, like I'm of an age where I remember the heroin crisis and what that caused and the families and the deaths on families, and it was horrendous. But after that, you had people that went through recovery, that went into schools and told the kids their experiences of drug addiction and how it impacted on them, you know.
Mike Walsh is with us as well. He's a team leader of a community substance misuse team in Limerick. Mike, what do you think about the argument made earlier on the show by Janet that, you know, part of this is the normalization of drugs in society, or the relaxed attitude that you see in some quarters, that feeds into a proliferation amongst younger people?
I can't argue with what Anne's saying. The experiences that we're having in Limerick across the Midwest is that every community is affected in some way by somebody else's substance use or their own substance use. And, you know, going back to when I was a young fella, you know, the experimental stages, you'd move into that kind of social stage where people are engaging in activity because other people are doing it, and it becomes nice. Some people will never become addicted to, you know, their first drink or their first use of substances. Then it gets onto, you know, that addictive, the problematic stage, and then onto the addictive stage where you've got no real, where that compulsion starts, where you've got no control then over the decisions you make. And that's a very hard, I suppose, direction to change.
Have we got a slightly contradictory or hypocritical attitude, I wonder, as well to drug consumption in this country. And it's a point Bobby Smith made earlier, the psychiatrist, and he was here. He said, you know, that there's rarely mention of alcohol in these conversations. And in his view, alcohol is the gateway drug to other drug use.
I can't argue with Bobby either. You know, he's held that view for a long time, and you know, we'd see that in the evidence of you know, young people coming through. I guess if you're going to look at the trends and use the evidence of the data that turns up at our service, you've got to remember that young people who come to our service are brought there by an adult who cares or has an influence or has a responsibility. There are many who don't have that access. We try very hard to get out to the rural communities, but can't. But yes, alcohol, it's very rare that the person who shows up in front of us, that 13 to 16, 17-year-old, is there because of alcohol. It's usually cannabis, because that's what that's noticed, that's the evidence. The alcohol tends to be more tolerated and more acceptable, and gets really less. It's socially accepted more. Yeah. As is, you know, but cannabis
is becoming
direction.
That way as well, isn't it? You know, like I made the point earlier. You cannot walk around any town or city in Ireland without kind of walking through a cloud of weed, like a smell of it. You know, every few minutes, it's everywhere, and it's hard then to turn around to your own kids or to any kid and say, you know, this is a terrible thing, you shouldn't be doing it. But, you know, but sorry, that person is doing it over there in full view of everybody else and nobody's stopping them.
Yeah, and we saw that with, I think Bobby mentioned the vaping. It's our biggest trend over the last two plus years. And we're going from, you know, nicotine into THC, into HHC, and seeing really difficult experiences and psychotic experiences by young people that are, they don't get to our service. They get straight to psychiatric support or to UHL. But, you know, they're trying alcohol and they're using alcohol along with those substances. And, you know, you look out my office window in the middle of Limerick City and, you know, quite a high population or high number of people are vaping. And we've no idea what's in those devices, which is the concern.
You know, you mentioned kind of the situation in and around Limerick. I remember a few years ago interviewing somebody, and he claimed to be the first person who brought heroin to Port Laois, and kind of this kind of bonkers where they used to kind of get these old cars and they'd drive them up and down the road, you know, until they gave out, and they'd be kind of hitchhiking with bags full of the stuff. And you know, it was just an example of how that, and I had mentioned that epidemic from the 80s, you know, that how that was very much an urban thing, you know, not exclusively, but very much so. We're kind of gone past that point, I think, aren't we? In society, I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's I guess through COVID, it didn't see the number of people not using go down. It had a little bit of an impact. It's coming in through the post. It's coming in through, you know, the ports. It's coming through, you know, any avenue that is, I suppose, you know, available. You know, young people are getting access to it more easily. You know, they're ordering it. There's apps for this, that, and the other. So, you know, the young people are having so much exposure compared to what we would have. And it's hard to get the balance between trying not to frighten parents. For instance, you know, the conversation around, you know, cocaine in every GA club, like that, you know, GA clubs are in every village. There is substance misuse being in a lot of villages, but you don't want to frighten parents away from that. It's in every club and in every village, and that your child. Otherwise, we start to lose that connection with pro-social activities that are healthy, that need to be. But we do need to do something about the current state of affairs. We're always losing the battle to keep up with the demand for treatment.
And how do we strike the balance then in terms of our attitude to drug use? Because there has been a more a move to a more relaxed approach, kind of born of a more sympathetic view of the drug user. You know, that we shouldn't be criminalizing them, that, you know, people have an addiction and that addiction needs to be treated rather than just processing them through the criminal justice system. And at the same time, you know, that attitude seems to have kind of ended up in a situation whereby there's a kind of a blind eye turned to low level drug use, which seems to have a negative consequence.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's that. I mean, as Mike said, there's quite a number of people that would use drugs recreationally, and they will never become addicted. And to criminalise them, so, you know, say the Gardaí stop somebody just by the way, and they happen to be in possession of weed or coke or whatever it is that they have, they don't, you know, have a criminal background, they've never been charged with anything before, and to criminalise them, I think, is entirely wrong. Now, I don't know whether you remember a couple of weeks ago, there was a statement made by the government where they were talking about introducing a kind of a one-off, like if you're stopped, you get away with it once. Mm. I don't know how that would be dealt with, but I think that it shouldn't be like one strike and you're out. I think the money that we have, because it's all about funding and putting the funding in the right place for the people that actually need it. So to stop somebody that's using drugs recreationally and may never become addicted to any substance, and take that funding away from somebody that really badly needs it,
yeah,
is wrong. And I do think, like, so we're waiting on the National Drug Strategy this year. It's to be due out by the end of the year. There's been an independent evaluation by Grant Thornton done on it. And that actually reflects what I've been told by the service providers. It's about lack of multi-annual funding, and it's about communities being excluded from decision-making when it comes to the actual strategy. So a lot of the people that are providing services, and Mike, I'm sure, will agree with this, they haven't been involved in the discussion. And they're the experts.
Like a lot of this, though, is in terms of intervention, you know, and resourcing intervention. And all of that is hugely important. But I guess the more important thing to do is to stop the kids engaging in the first place.
Yeah, but that's an education piece. And I mean, Mike mentioned the GAA club, and I don't think that it's frightening people off if you let them know the issues that drugs cause, you know, the problems. It won't frighten parents off to know, because every parent knows. Like, I have three adult kids.
But I guess, not to cut across, I guess the question I'm asking is how do we, lots of people don't want to go back to kind of criminalising kind of low-level drug use kind of putting addicts through a criminal justice system. And as you say, plenty of people are not addicts, and it's kind of just very low level use. And there's a view, and it's not shared by everyone, but there's a view you don't criminalize that behavior either. But how then do you do that piece of education? How do you educate children about the harm posed by drugs? And at the same time, in the same breath, say, by the way, you can carry around a small bit of coke and, you know, that's grand. Don't worry about it.
But if you look at...
It's either harmful or it's not.
Yeah, but if you look at the smoking ban, right? And I was a very heavy smoker at the time. I knew it was bad for me and everything else. But there was a lot of money on the road safety and all of those big campaigns that we've had that have been quite successful. There was money invested in them. There was an education piece. They went into schools, clubs, on the television, you know, ads explaining to kids what the pitfalls are.
Yeah. While that was happening, we were making it more and more socially unacceptable to be a smoker. Whereas we're trying to educate kids while making it more and more socially acceptable to take drugs.
But we're not. We're saying that those people that use them recreationally shouldn't be criminalised. They shouldn't, you know, be blocked from going to America and Australia and whatever in the future, going to certain colleges. Don't criminalise them. But that doesn't say don't educate them to the problems that are caused by the use of drugs.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Anne, listen, appreciate the time. Thank you for joining us. Anne Graves is a Sinn Féin TD and the party spokesperson on the National Drug and Alcohol Strategy, Addiction Recovery and Wellbeing. Mike Walsh, of course, as I mentioned, is a team leader with the Community Substance Misuse Team in Limerick. Mike, thank you very much as well.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.